This is Catherine Hastings, and you're listening to Word Temple on KRCB 91.1 FM. Tonight's program will feature an interview with Todd Melliker, along with other things going on, but I'm going to begin the program by playing a couple of cuts from a CD by Patty Trimble, T-R-I-M-B-L-E. Trimble is a local poet and performing word artist, and she really produces marvelous work. The CD I'll be playing from is In the Middle of the Night of the Road of My Life, I Found Myself in a Tangled Wood. And of course, this is a play on words from a Dante quote, In the Middle of Our Life, I Found Myself in a Dark Wood. I'll be playing two cuts from the CD. One is the title poem, In the Middle of the Night of the Road of My Life, I Found Myself in a Tangled Wood. And the other is called What is What? Now, there are a couple of musicians who appear throughout this CD, and I want to make sure to give them cred. One is Peter Whitehead. He plays cello, 16-string zither, Chinese banjo, toy melodeon, piano, and spike fiddle. And then on the cut, What is What?, Jean Libbea, L-I-B-B-E-A, and if I'm mispronouncing your name, I'm sorry, Jean, he plays acoustic bass. So here now are two cuts from the CD, In the Middle of the Night of the Road of My Life, I Found Myself in a Tangled Wood, Patty Trimble.
In the middle of the night, on the road of my life, I found myself in a tangled wood. It's 3 a.m., I'm alert on this dim road less traveled, and my husband breathes beside me easy like the silent earth. But I've got thoughts to think before I sleep in the hormonal night. Should I buy my son some shoes? Do I want green tea or double latte frappuccino light? Shouldn't I live the rest of my life outside on the granite ledge? There's time in the sleepless shadows to think of all the things I can't understand. I worry about the environment, nature, what now fades away. What if in some ancient city lies a manuscript, and within it proof that Eden includes even the Chevron station on Washington Street? What if the waving, gesturing trees are trying to tell us, hey, do less, not more? What if the gods decide in favor of the wild earth and the people? What if we just wait 5 years? What if there was no cheese or no cinnamon, or I'd never seen Etna's chestnut trees dropping their spiny fruit between the black basalt rivers? And what about the collision of myth, history, and the springtime of nations? What if Icarus fell beside me on the sidewalk? If suddenly a beautiful boy just appeared on the ground like those boys on the swimming rocks, their heads full of dreams, their mouths pursed against warnings. I'm thinking of cities littered with the fallen. Those boys, that kind of courage, the beauty of their wings. I can't fall asleep. I should maybe meditate or breathe really deep and slow. But what about Jerusalem? I worry about Jerusalem. What if the ebb and flow of conversation never floods the fertile valley? What if all our wailing, praising, demanding never polishes the shape of grace? What if when we prayed for peace, we knew what else to do? And then again, what if the old city is truly the blessed center of life, and only in her narrow streets of faith we remember how to sing and dance in gratitude, no humility is necessary to the day? What if here, in my assumed land of plenty, I forget to bow to the river, bow to the rain, bow to the lover, bow to the dog? How can I remember to drop down, kiss the holy stone? And I worry worry about freedom and America and all that? What is the connection between liberty and guns in the drawer? Between liberty, good health, and the mystery of human life? And what if Rudolf Steiner was right? In the atmosphere, the shape of every living thing ordained, our destiny to fill that unique space. What if I never enter that salon in my party dress? What if enthusiasm is not enough? It's 4:30 a.m. on the homestretch murky road of my raggedy artist life. So what's the deal with money? Why can't I find a bailout fund, a firewall against crisis in the poet zone, or Wunderkind plans for a $4 tchotchke that tastes like truffles with white sturgeon caviar and also saves the biosphere? It's so bloody quiet out there, I'm worried how the world sleeps, as if this imbalance is the dream of reason. I'm awake. I did the sums. If Larry Ellison gave me only half his fortune, I could live just fine for 400,000 years. And what if I'm a genius and I've missed my chances? What if each moment is a thin-skinned bubble, a transparent sphere floating, and on its scrim swims the reflection of every sound and form? And when it bursts, if I listen just a little bit harder, I could hear it. The delicate, organized cacophony of life. And I could be Mozart, or Gertrude Stein, or Gandhi, sitting at my desk, pen in hand. Now the sky is gaining light. Dawn is thinking it will dawn, and the anxious woods crowd close. What if I'd chosen a career and never known my son? What if I'd never seen the high plateau, the black bear, and the raven? Why was I born into such a fulsome bakery? Why do I get a piece of the pie? What if I could keep my head when all about me are losing theirs? And what if, when the world ends, predicted soon, I'm navigating all alone, driving in the fast lane in my car? Read in the New York Times on Tuesday, three astronomers, Perlmutter, Schmidt, and Rice, won the Nobel Prize for naming a mysterious force that speeds our universe out towards a shape, like Dante's rose in heaven, where you and I have reserved seats, a shape like the flower that blooms below the enlightened Buddha's feet. Perlmutter, Schmidt, and Rice tell us the force that binds us close and opens us wide is most of everything everywhere, but they actually can't see it, and what it is anybody's guess. And as I'm a bona fide anybody, I'm forming my own hypothesis. Sounds like love to me. What if love is a substance scientists have been looking for, the invisible, unmeasured binding of all we call matter simmering in the void? What if love is the dark matter twine that leashes planets in their glad swing about the night? And Newton's force that holds coffee in the cup, the force that pulls my cells towards my beloved as if they are his, not mine? Is it gravity or love that disables my inertia, that moves me? And is it love or gravity that drops us to our knees and holds all matter intact, coalesced, so we are strangely unnerved at separation? And it must be love that keeps the moon so close, so smitten with earth. Look how she makes the tide of feeling rise. Or if gravity is really just gravity, then surely love is the prize-winning 95% of everything force that quickens us to immeasurable breath, speeds us to be all that we can be. So I'm wrestling the faith-bound theories of mystics and faith-bound theories of scientists into one big, multidimensional, multi-circuitous, multi-petaled, unified theory of, oh, my most beloved, beloved, holy expanding rose of the compassionate mind of the artist formerly known as God. Basically, what I'm saying is scientists just need to see the light. Look at it this way. Perlmutter, Schmidt, and Rice shared $1.5 million for telling us massive halos circle the galaxies, but they called them too dark to see. When everyone knows the holy ones, the saints, carry light in the devoted heart as lanterns on darkening paths. Centuries ago, they reported these phenomena. The golden crowns of the prophets, auras of the bodhisattvas, the innumerable halos of uncountable seraphim and 14 kinds of angels. Perlmutter, Schmidt, and Rice said this week they've approached the center of all we know. They think it revolves, but they can't see that either for all the darkness. And it's so disappointing. Why don't they ask the Mevlevi, consult a dervish about the still point of the eternal gyre? I say, let's think ecumenically. Let's launch a Hildegard mission, send signals from light-filled minds to deep space to measure the caritas that is abundant in Omnia. The love, Hildegard told us, abounds in all things, from below our feet to the farthest extremities of excellence. Let's build the Chartres Explorer to chart the window above our heads, or the Dante Project to map the stadium in paradise shaped like the glorious rose. Or maybe as laureates mumble about universes expanding, contracting, the Socrates mission could direct the righteous on geodetic pathways out and out and locate the Elysium fields where universes forever bloom and fade. Already centuries ago, Muhammad promised us the light of Allah's glorious countenance which illuminates the heavens. Already centuries ago, Buddha said we could see his holy face of compassion, but first we must hold in our minds where he sits. We must imagine his lotus throne, the great flower of 84,000 petals, each petal the color of hundreds of jewels with 84,000 veins, in heavenly patterns of 84,000 rays of light. I would put it to Perlmutter, Schmidt, and Rice. This lotus, which millions have seen, can see, is the expanse of the enlightened mind, and it must be our universe lit up as bright as it is, if we could only see the energy that binds. And when we broke the binding of atoms, what blinding light was released and why? And didn't we know in our terror, our wrath, our shame, weren't we certain we'd broken the bonds of love? Schmidt and Rice say, according to math, it turns out we're insignificant, at the mercy of the great unseen, and they got a prize for this. They say physics is shaky these days, and Einstein's single theory is now a fading dream. I tell you, they stand beside the Tibetan monks, humbled, painting again and again in sand the exquisite architecture of heaven and brushing it away with a smile. Their theories are subject to non-performance. They said so themselves, and I'm telling you, my theory was proven eons ago. My Elysium universal field theory, my anybody's guess hypothesis of, oh, most beloved, beloved, and beloved. And the endorsements are flooding in. Hildegard, Jesus, Mohammed, Buddha, the yogi down the street who tells me my chakras emanate the energy unleashed in the first moments of universal creation. We all agree that Caritas at truly, madly, deeply, abundant in omnia, and the people in the dark are simply the people in the dark.
You've been listening to Patty Trimble perform two cuts from her CD, In the Middle of the Night of the Road of My Life, I Found Myself in a Tangled Wood. I hope to have Patty on the show soon, and I hope to have her at the live Word Temple Poetry Series as well. For more information, you can go to PattyTrimble.com, PattiTrimble.com. Okay, let's move on now to my interview with Sonoma County poet Todd Malachar. This is Catherine Hastings, and you are listening to Word Temple on KRCB 91.1 FM. My next guest is Todd Malachar. Todd is someone who I've been following for a number of years now and have admired his work ever since I laid my eyes on it. Before we talk about your poems, Todd, let's just find out a little bit about you. Like, where are you from?
I originally grew up in a little town called Portola. It's
in California.
In California, but it's north of Truckee about an hour and west of Reno about an hour, if that helps sort of locate it. But it's a little tiny population, 2045 little place. So, but
and
I guess
the population now or when you were growing
it
up?
It might be smaller now. That was the population when I was growing up.
Yeah.
So, but it's really nice. It is in the, the High Sierras, and it's very beautiful. We're still in the trees. So I grew up with a lot of nature and landscape and those sorts of things. So I think that probably follows me.
Do you still have family there?
Yes, my parents still live there.
Oh, good. So you get to go back. That's nice. Well, how long have you been in Sonoma County?
Oh, my. I've been in Sonoma County, oh, my goodness, I think 20 years now. So it's been a while.
I find it strange when I discover that I've almost been here longer than the place I grew up in.
Yeah, I've now been here longer than the place I grew up in.
And yet home is always home somehow,
right.
Were you educated at Sonoma State University?
Yes.
That's where you went to college. And I'm assuming you studied with Gillian Connolly.
Yes,
there,
I did. Gillian Connolly was one of my prime mentor at Sonoma State.
Yeah,
so.
I think it shows in your work, too, that your path really follows work like Gillian's. It has that kind of interest to me. So who are your other influences?
Do you mean in terms of other teachers? Or
not necessarily. Just people that you...
Well, I would say I'm sort of like in terms of other teachers, I think other people you've had through Word Temple, like Aaron Shuren was one of my mentors. He's delightful. You had Laura Walker on. Walker's a good friend of mine. She's wonderful. In terms of sort of writers, I tend to be interested in sort of like the shorter lyrics. So I love Basho, Robert Creeley, say who else, that's sort of small. People may know a poet named Larry Eigner.
Oh,
he's one of my favorites. And then one of my really true favorites, which he's very obscure. He was a poet from the 70s, a man named Frank Sempere. He wrote New York and wrote these sort of like very similar to other people who've written poems about when they're out walking. And so he has these sort of poems that he wrote when he's out walking, but he has this wonderful way of distilling. I guess that's what I'm really interested in poetry is when it distills things.
Yeah, and I can see that. And you talk about writing poetry walking, and whenever I see your bio, it's very short and sweet, and it says we can find you wandering the streets of Petaluma for recording GPS information. Do you write poems while you're walking around for your job?
No, not particularly, but I think someone pointed out still that because there is so much sun and sky and landscape that I think that I can't help but be influenced. So,
absolutely.
So on one hand, it's just I'm surrounded by it, so therefore it's sort of, I'm bathed in it. I soak it up while
it's
I'm outside.
It's going to find its way in there somehow. Well, I've seen a number of your chapbooks over the years, all of them just beautifully produced, let alone the poetry that's in them. That I was just so happy to find out that your first full-length collection came out, which is called Rendezvous. So over how much time were the poems in Rendezvous written? Because the book reads as if they were written to appear in precisely this way.
Well, to this I say, if there are those people who are still waiting for their first book, keep holding on, because there's poems in here that are 10 years old.
Yes. Yeah.
So there are some poems in here that are 10 years old, and then there are some that are probably much more recent, maybe in the last 4 or so years.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting to think that they all sort of fit together. I think sometimes it's because it's really we are ourselves, and so that's the sort of thread that is always linking things together.
Well, if you read down the table of contents, it kind of feeds into the idea that these poems all came about close together. I'm just going to read the table of contents. Nautilus, Day Collects, Nautilus, Rendezvous 1, Nautilus, and it goes on like that, so I won't read the whole table of contents, but there's this beautiful braiding of the titles of the poems, a leaving off and a returning all the way through the book. So these poems may have been written over 10 years, but they found each other in a really beautiful way, I think.
I like the sound of that. I like this. I do. I like the idea of that not so much that I combined them, but that they combined themselves. I like that. That sounds
really
nice.
They rendezvoused.
Yeah.
They rendezvoused. So, as in your chapbooks, the poems in Rendezvous are really interesting visually, as well as they are sonically and through imagery and meaning, all kinds of ways. The poems appear in kind of different outfits, I'll put it that way. There are poems that are paragraphs, poems written in fragments, poems written in sentences that split off from each other. I think it was Gillian Connolly, when I was at Vermont College, she came and gave a lecture on white space. And that's one of the things that really draws me to your work, is how you use white space in really interesting ways. But you even have poems, and it's King and Queen, the King and Queen, where lines appear right side up, and then they're braided with lines that appear upside down, and it's just fantastic. There's this continual inventiveness, I think, through the book that allows your readers to have an equal portion of inventiveness in how they're going to read the poems.
Well, so. I hope so.
So I'm wondering how these different forms came up. How did you decide upon them? And for instance, how do you read King and Queen aloud at a poetry reading when the lines are right side up, upside down, interspersed with each other?
Well, so I guess to talk about King and Queen, the idea for them came because I guess I had been working on, I was trying to come up with a wedding poem. And so when I was writing that, I sort of had this idea where there's the two sides, one, you know, one being the husband, one being the wife, and how could I play with that sort of interacting, you know, like two different voices that would come together. And I just happened upon turning one upside down and connecting them. But mm-hmm. I thought that perhaps that was just sort of a one-time thing and a trick, and it was just for the moment. But then later on, sometimes I think everyone has this experience where you're like, huh, I remember I did this one thing and I don't know if it entirely worked. Maybe I'd like to try it again.
Uh-huh.
And so I did it again with the king and the queen. And then sort of, you know, then you sort of push at it a little and say, okay, I've done it again. Can I do it again? Mm-hmm. Can I do it again? And so I found that I could do it until I hit about 16. And then I realized I couldn't do them any longer.
You were done.
Yeah. So I just, yeah, it's just interesting that it's that you can keep sort of feeling your way with the form, and it will also tell you sort of when it's done, when right. it sort of run its course at the same time.
That's great. That's really great that, you know, you stay awake to that. You know, you know when it's working and when it's done.
Well, and it's to add to that, it's the other funny thing in this book is also the Nautilus poems in terms of, say, like form. Nautilus poems, I kept reworking the form because I never felt like I've put them in the right body. And so in some ways, sometimes it feels like, okay, I've found the form and then the poem coheres to that. And other times it feels like, okay, it doesn't really fit right. So I'm going to break it apart and put it back together and reassemble it. So
the poem insists on a form.
Right. So they used to be lineated and now they're sort of in that prose poem paragraph block, but they used to be, I used to have them in stanzas. I used to have them in small lines. I used to have them in large lines. I had them broken up and put in different ways. And finally, like you say, like they sort of more coalesced together into the form that they're in.
And those poems that appear as prose poems, you know, a little paragraph, right? They work so beautifully because when I read them myself, I find that I don't need the space between words. I don't need the silence. They're so interesting. The string of words that you put together are just so beautifully placed, and each one is so important to that little paragraph, you know? So, I mean, I don't want to, you know, make your head too big here, but they're just
You're
great.
Very, very sweet. Thank you.
So in Rendezvous, you've borrowed words and phrases also. Mm-hmm. You borrowed from a contemporary poet, someone you know by the name of T.M. Baird, as well as the letters of Vincent van Gogh to his brother Theo. And it all seems rather seamless, the language of Melacher and the language of these other people. How did you choose these particular thefts?
Well, I think it's sort of like we are interested in things sort of partly they come to us, like maybe that's the theme of this interview, is things, letting things come to you and giving permission to letting things sit and arrive. But it was also what I happened to be reading at the time. So I happened to be reading some of the letters of Vincent van Gogh. And then my friend TM had been writing me these letters, asking me questions, interestingly enough, about the King and Queen poems. So I was writing her responses to the King and Queen poems at the same time we're reading these letters. And then it just sort of begins to sort of unfold from there. I think at one point, TM, she in a letter, she wrote like a, it was like a poem letter that was all questions. And it was like 20 some odd questions. And so I thought, well, this is a very interesting idea. How about I write a response to each of these 20 questions in a way? And so then they began to grow out of my responses to, you know, what better way to have a poem that asks you questions than to respond with a bunch of poems that just ask more questions?
Right, good.
So there are never any answers.
Yeah,
just more and more questions.
Leaving an open ending, right? Open everything. Good. Well, I'm going to sit back now and just hand the mic over to you so we can hear you read from Rendezvous, which was published by Rescue Press, and I'm just very happy to have you here today.
Oh. Well, thank you.
You're listening to Word Temple on KRCB 91.1 FM. Let's return now to Todd Melliker.
All right. So, since we were talking about King and Queen, perhaps I'll read a couple of those. And so the way that I read it to sort of help with the interaction is that I read it four ways so that you can hear the different lines play against each other. So this one starts with Queen. Queen, her crown but a cup of her hands, the divine weathering prophet just above the ankle, heaven stretching height from the neck and arms. The embrace of gentility studied, the affected faces on the playing cards, her previous life as a cello. King, his incline suggests his listening, arc of an allowed back, the wishbone assembly, renewal through furniture legs and spoken softly with a hand to place tandem living, fascia, scale, shivers, he takes care. So here is King and Queen combined. Her crown but a cup of scale, shivers, he takes care of her hands, the divine tandem living, fascia, weathering prophet just above the ankle, spoken softly with a hand to place heaven stretching height from the neck and renewal through furniture legs and arms, the embrace of gentility studied back, the wishbone assembly, the affected faces on the playing cards, her listening arc of an allowed previous life as a cello, his incline suggests his. King and Queen. His incline suggests his previous life as a cello, listening, arc of an allowed, the affected faces on the playing cards, her back, the wishbone assembly, arms, the embrace of gentility studied, renewal through furniture legs, and heaven stretching height from the neck, and spoken softly with a hand to place weathering prophet just above the ankle, tandem living, fascia of her hands, the divine of scale, shivers, he takes care, her crown but a cup. So now I'll read from some of the Nautilus poems. So they all have the same title. Nautilus. The slow descent, that is, there he is going out white. Of course, there is another street of colors that are lovers. Between them, a series of traffic signs and the compartment for sun-stained maps. Regarding the making of air requires taking the shortest distance. An absence of quantity defines the flight of the asterisk. There's a shed in the backyard, a place for shovels. Nautilus. A sky blankens, and clouds she loved bluely move through her body. The sea is the largest timekeeper between them. It will provide for the location of escape among their fingers. Her hand on her hip like a rainbow. That is, wet and like a rainbow, he leans over in the shower. Leaves fill up the drain in front of the house. Today acquires Atlas. Nautilus. The astronaut steps from his cul-de-sac of fluid oxygen. Now and then, an earth peels from its shell to unfurl its tentacles. The curtains are familiar. The clock tells time. The stomach of a bell has many chambers. Meanwhile, an island's color is determined by the process in which it was cast. Their steeple and thread led a quiet life in the mountains. Nautilus. Emergence is for a slightly used morning, equal to doves, equal to the nearness of the ground, equal to pressing. She's lying in the same plane and never meeting. Day is identified by horizon line. Then the ivy breath and zeros they poured over. Colder the galaxy begins, as does the need for parking. Cells divide cells. She knows this. Nautilus. A skin without clouds is empty. To form a word without actually, the circle drifts. Cells will divide into cells. Bowls stack neatly into each other. She's straight to the blue through a selection of recollected openings, endings. They try to close them by themselves. With. Sure enough, the screen door slaps against the house. He settles the porch. And now I'll read from Rendezvous. Rendezvous. We put ourselves on in the morning, that is, a shirt. This arc and ask of you. I have such fear of separating into the more sun, the same sun, a single result, askew in the morn and the warm-blooded everything, craving for a nest. Flood world worried, these daily tasks, asking you to shed the seeds, the necessary pairs. You began sewing shut the names, show me stratum, the animal's worn mark, the color of color-crushing sunlight. And I guess I should add into these, what's interesting about the Rendezvous poems is they have a little bit of a play like The King and Queen. So there, some of them are in two columns, so I'll read this one again with separate columns. This arc and ask of you, the more sun, the same sun, askew in the morn and everything, flood world worried, these daily tasks to shed the seeds. You began sewing shut the names. Show me the animal's worn mark, the color of. I have such fear of separating into a single result, the warm-blooded craving for a nest, asking you the necessary pairs, stratum of color-crushing sunlight. Rendezvous. Assembly required, the exploded view diagram and parts list. I was overwhelmed by mechanics and the living. Everything's hard to do here. It hurts in your hand while the sun crawls in my stomach. What to do now that our bodies arrive again, derived from the given up, divine, etc., covered over being by division and being given your slung song. An intentional blemish, the arc, you say, of soil, parting my hair, balancing the animals on my fingers. Rendezvous, when it did not come back, the land had detached from the sea. The soil coiled in a cup, a soil culled in a bowl. Why, you say, and say why, the color is delicate here. The best we can make are a series of preparations. Yes, the indelible X, but does it still and singing? We take the dove bird in and out of our chests with a certainty of naming during the collection of names. In and out of our mouths. I color myself at the eyes. Sky to sky, a sun shy at sea. Rely, I'll say, be arc or cart, for daily we line and lay the shell, quell a seed pod. Rendezvous. The trouble with being a bird is everyone knows your same song. The day as it thickens, night to the quick. A garden of quiver cuts out my gift. But is it sleep and sweet is the dun? Enjoyed to you, enjoined than dawn, as song and sun will find a rind from its pith, still the broken fish and dove. Rendezvous, this seed of God in God, a crack in every roof. We lay under the upturned boat, a center is nothing. Separated from water, without gravity. I was told photons arrive in pairs, in arcs, sets, to be set apart as a set, then settling down in the night nest. What could we have done otherwise? Abandon, shivered and silvered, the ark to carry, this ark to place in, marry in, our mouth. Rendezvous, and God commenced the making of shells. It was from then on we became like the sun, all touching and no seeing, this being one who names, trying on houses, different sets of arms, tin cans. The heart came in its own paper sack with your impossibilities, an X over the chest of a bird, as if knowing the sun, as if a space perfectly loved, and I. The hands are interchangeable, replaceable. But let's no more retellings. I shall be completely exhausted after the orchard. We draw an imperfect row line. Rendezvous. Only later did surgery leave the body and we ascended the stairs, paired. For if one wakes early and is not alone, the word for soul is neck. What we need is no less what is, and whether, the narrowing passage. I decide on active melancholy, brainbone to blood organ, water to air. But what if you don't believe in? It is said you touch first what you will remove, seed ship or boat husk, the living arrival, daily and no matter, the evaporate stars, blood works. Rendezvous. When the song began, we found we couldn't stop it. You're the gardener and I the surgeon, you the saints and I a virgin. Your need to grow minds and my one mind to cut. How are your wings to blame now that I'm swimming? Shut your eyes, little fishes, ponds, scissors, knives, stitches, visions. Rendezvous. More numerous than the sons of the sea, we had fallen accidentally from the mouths of the flying ones. If so green, if so we came, a marvelous blue the sun is, I'm to cover you, making you cold covered. The sea stars cling to the boat, else we form we inside the eyelid. They will encase and color and seed. The center of the star is a mouth, and often so melancholy. The doves are crushing sunlight in their bodies. We left the sea for a garden held to the tongue. Rendezvous, and we sunk the singer to sleep in a rowboat dividing the pines, to sleep a shiver joint in joins, to sleep as the nerve first grieves and shrinks the light, to sleep as a high diver his falling kite, to sleep as this shovel bites and becomes near earth, to sleep as a satellite holds fast to its perch. Rendezvous. Sincerely. Please insert your DNA sequence here. So named. I'm coming aware of the whole, what, that all parts belong, and so does water, coaxed forth. That's what I wanted to say, tell you. The animals relieve me of surety, seriousness. Sure, everywhere is where you are, who you are. Everywhere, in sun and blue, there are pairs around you, about you, where you and are. To this be true, an arc flow, and you flew away with my green.
This is Catherine Hastings. You have been listening to Todd Melliker reading from his book Rendezvous, published by Rescue Press in early 2014. Todd, I want to thank you again for coming. I absolutely love your work. You get three poems out of one sometimes. It's all very interesting. Are you working on putting together another collection right now?
Yes, I am. So being poets, we're always constantly working, aren't we? I sense that you are the same way.
Well, thanks again.
Thank you, Catherine. You're very sweet.
This is Catherine Hastings, and you're listening to Word Temple on KRCB 91.1 FM. You have been listening to an interview and a reading with Sonoma County poet Todd Melliker. I'm going to spell his name for you in case you want to find his book. It's T-O-D-D-M-E-L-I-C-K-E-R. His book is called Rendezvous, and it was published early this year by Rescue Press. I think it was a couple of years ago that Bruce Snyder paid a visit to Sonoma County, and I recorded a show with him. His new book was just out called Paradise, Indiana. And after we finished recording that show, he agreed to record three additional poems for future use, one of them which is the title poem for Paradise, Indiana. So here now is Bruce Snyder.
Paradise, Indiana. Some nights the streets divided me like one of those snowy Indiana towns with names like Paradise or Liberty, the Kankakee sweeping its icy waters past the winter carnival rising into the dark. This was the stuff they claimed God made us for, the whole town rumbling with the smell of sweet ribs, the slaughterhouse sprawling under angels with plastic wings, a blow-up Santa. Crowds gathered at the ticket booth, a hog turning on its spit. My father coughed a lit camel through the cracked window, Mom in the front seat, the whole car shaking as they fought near the barbecue pit, love unfolding its smoke and ash. It never ended, that road back home, past the Church of God where the preacher said we'd one day rise, whole-bodied into the sky. The graveyard frozen thick with children from the cholera epidemic of 1906. I could feel the sky crush down on me in the dead of winter. But some mornings the fields were so vast in their whiteness that the silos towered like the future, ice-caked and glistening. I'd put my frozen hands in my pockets to keep them warm, or watch my parents walking arm in arm past the Nativity with its baby Jesus, twice stolen, now nailed to the manger, his cracked halo painted so yellow it could be, if seen from a distance, polished gold. The Smoke. Past houses, past pickers and bone cleaners, rats and carrion birds, alley cats clawing out fish heads from the trash, the smoke rose, a black river shivering. It rose past Cherubusco and Wawasee, Goose Lake and Big Cedar, past the steer calf grinding its bud teeth, and the dogs that stopped barking to sniff the air. As it traveled, it carried the boy who started it all, flames climbing his sleeve to his collar to the baseball cap dazzling now on his head. It carried his screams past the gutted warehouse, past Max's metal, iron, and scrap. It rose into combines filling the dead machines. One hair at a time, it rose with his waxen face, eyes and skin spilling into weather, fields, crops, the peach trees withering, fruit darkened, maggot at the root. It rose where nothing else could, into attic crevices, into dreams of people sleeping in their beds. It blackened the steps of the Baptist church, where later the congregation would pray, for the match struck just to watch it flare in the darkness, for the way a body is lifted smoking from the grass, for the trees, how they flickered outside the window, for all that would be remembered, the dirt roads grieving, the harvest time, the sowing of the seeds, for the season they knew would follow through autumn's blazing maples, through the poplar and ash. The afterlife of roadkill. See the brown mutt bleed through its garland of burrs, a torn possum drooling dried streaks of foam, lice-flecked raccoons on the yellow line split wide. See how holy they open to us in death, to the moon, to the red elm scabbed with mites. They open to riverbeds and the song of the wren, to flowering plums and the barbed wire fence. Over and over, they open to carrion birds catching scent, beginning to rise. Even their skulls, picked clean, look upwards, knowing nothing of their missing eyes.
That was Bruce Snyder reading from his book, Paradise, Indiana. I'm sure all of my listeners know by now that Maya Angelou died on Wednesday, May 28th. She was not a young woman. She was 86. Still, the news came pretty hard. Born Marguerite Johnson in St. Louis, Missouri, on April 4th, 1928, Angelou was an author, poet, historian, songwriter, playwright, dancer, stage and screen producer, director, performer, singer, and a civil rights activist. Having had the pleasure of meeting her decades ago in San Francisco, I can say that she was also a very compassionate, gentle, and kind woman. I had had an essay published in a book and read it in San Francisco, and afterwards she spoke with me, holding my hand the whole time. She is best known for her autobiographical books, Mom and Me and Mom, Random House, 2013, Letter to My Daughter, 2008, All God's Children Need Traveling Shoes, 1986, The Heart of a Woman, 1981, Singing and Swinging and Getting Merry Like Christmas, 1976, Gather Together in My Name, 1974, and perhaps most famously, I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings, published in 1969 and nominated for the National Book Award. Her books of poetry include A Brave and Startling Truth, The Complete Collected Poems of Maya Angelou, Wouldn't Take Nothing for My Journey Now, Now Sheba Sings the Song, I Shall Not Be Moved, Shaker, Why Don't You Sing, Oh Pray My Wings Are Gonna Fit Me Well, and Just Give Me a Cool Drink of Water Before I Die. This last book was also nominated for the Pulitzer Prize. Angelou was a civil rights activist, as I mentioned earlier, and she worked alongside Martin Luther King Jr. She was also appointed by President Carter to the Commission for International Woman of the Year. She accepted a lifetime appointment in 1981 as Reynolds Professor of American Studies at Wake Forest University in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. In 1993, Angelou wrote and delivered a poem called On the Pulse of the Morning at the inauguration for President Bill Clinton at his request. She received the National Medal of Arts in 2000, and in 2010, she was awarded the Presidential Medal of Freedom by President Barack Obama. There is more about Dr. Angelou. She was a controversial figure as well. I won't go into all of that, but she was also the first black woman director in Hollywood. She wrote screenplays and documentaries. She was nominated for a Tony Award twice for her acting, once for her Broadway debut in Look Away, and again for her performance in Roots. I haven't found any decent recordings of Angelou reading that I can air on this program. Not yet, anyway. So I'm going to go ahead and read her poem. And this is called Caged Bird. The free bird leaps on the back of the wind and floats downstream till the current ends and dips his wings in the orange sun rays and dares to claim the sky. But a bird that stalks down his narrow cage can seldom see through his bars of rage. His wings are clipped and his feet are tied, so he opens his throat to sing. The caged bird sings with fearful trill of the things unknown but longed for still, and his tune is heard on the distant hill, for the caged bird sings of freedom. The free bird thinks of another breeze and the trade winds soft through the sighing trees, and the fat worms waiting on a dawn-bright lawn, and he names the sky his own. But a caged bird stands on the grave of dreams. His shadow shouts on a nightmare scream. His wings are clipped and his feet are tied, so he opens his throat to sing. The caged bird sings with a fearful trill of things unknown but longed for still, and his tune is heard on the distant hill, for the caged bird sings of freedom.
Them that's got shall have, them that's not shall lose. So the Bible said, and it still is news. Mama may have, Papa may have, but God bless the child that's got his own, that's got his own. Yes, the strong gets more while the weak ones fade. Empty pockets don't ever make the grade. Mama may have, Papa may have, but God bless the child that's got his own, that's got his own. Lots of friends, they're crowding round your door. But when you're gone and spending ends, they don't come no more. Rich relations give crust of bread and such, you can help yourself, but don't take too much. Mama may have, Papa may have, but God bless the child that's got his own, that's got his own.